Hi, everyone.
Welcome back to Too Niche. I'm Elizabeth.
I'm Lara. And this is the podcast where we haul.
We pick a topic and we haul it.
And today, in honor of the imminent release of season two of And Just Like That.
And the past week's 25th anniversary of the premiere of Sex and the City.
We are hauling our favorite Sex and the City episodes.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, before we get into the haul, there are just some items that we need to discuss.
We've committed to this. We've committed to a quick idol mention at the top of each show. I think there's only two episodes left after this, so
there's only five episodes total?
Yeah.
That irritates me. I'm sad because I honestly think that the Note Sex having Teletubbies won this round because the idol is not renewed for season two.
But like, was it ever a... See, this is the problem with American television. We're not fine with things just being like a one season long piece and accepting it for what it is.
I'm okay with that. But was it meant to be that from the jump? I thought this was meant to be like a whole
an
new
ongoing
thing.
I'm currently fine with it just being a one and done.
You're okay with it ending? Are you experiencing haterism?
I don't think it's haterism. It's just like, I tap out when it like with where it went.
See, to me, I was like, oh, that was what people were so mad about. Like, I think the subject matter obviously is NSFW, but right. Like that sex scene with the hairbrush, if you can even really call it a sex scene, like that was like, I was like, oh.
It just felt like this glamorization of trauma that like I didn't need. But like, that's just me personally. I also think that like stories can go to weird places. Like, that's fine. Like, it's not like an indictment on someone's imagination. Just like for me personally, it was reading as like bad online lit porn.
Yeah.
Like fanfic, like weird, just like it just went to a place where I'm like, it's not the vibe. It's not on the level.
It's 50 Shades of Grey, but somehow not as good.
Not good.
Which is saying a lot because 50 Shades of Grey was not good.
But I will say I wrote down two notes. One note is Jocelyn has senpaku eyes.
Yeah, she's deep in her senpaku era.
Jealous. The other thing was I was like, I think that she just needs a copy of The Artist's Way and she'll be set.
I know. I was like, God, if only she knew Elizabeth and was in an Artist's Way Zoom, she'd be a much happier person.
She wouldn't need any of that. Also, side thoughts. The thing that like bugged me that I couldn't get past is like the reality that they're living in terms of like the Valentino store scene, for instance. Like, are we living in a world like a post Dumois, post Page Six world? Like, you can't roll into a store, jizz on something, be an asshole to the people working there and have that not end up online.
True.
Like just things like that. It just, I can't like commit to that reality because it just, there's holes.
I was bumping on that scene too, just in terms of like people running up to like take pictures. Do people swarm like that randomly? Like if you're just going, like I feel like that's very early aughts era swarming
and Robertson like Boulevard.
Current celeb culture is like you might get swarmed if you're, you know, leaving your hotel to go to the Met Gala. There's like a lot of fans gathered, but I don't know if the fans gather if you're just like going shopping.
I agree. No, it just was like a weird, it wasn't landing. It went to full sheesh territory for me.
But I like the sheesh of it. I think it's like satire and it's pulpy and stupid. And visually, I'm down and I'm like, I'm on board with just like something that's kind of bad. It's almost like it's Sex and the City 2 where it's like so bad that it ends up being good.
Right. But Sex and the City 2 ages really well. I don't think that this is
Sex and the City 2 ages well.
No, in a way,
well?
It's fun to. Okay, let me rephrase that. It was the first watch was bad. The more I watch it, the more I like it.
Well, yeah, it's like
I don't think that that's going to happen with The Idol. I could be wrong, but I don't think I'm going to revisit The Idol in a few years and be like, you know what? This is actually camp and good and I'm having a good time. I'm just not. I don't see that being the thing.
I don't know.
Do you?
I don't know. It remains to be seen. That's why I would want more seasons of it, because I'm like, where are they going to go with this story?
The problem also with the cult leader character, there's no redeeming qualities. There's not even a tinge of a moment where you're like, oh, I would listen to this person.
Yeah, but I kind of think that's the point, is that he's supposed to be just like so bad and cheesy that I think that's the point.
Okay.
Vulture wrote an interesting take that was like five steps to getting idol-pilled, and was basically saying like, things that I've kind of been saying on my various podcasts as I just like ride so hard for the show. It's literally just triggered my like ODD where I'm like, I refuse to submit to any sort of narrative that this is like a bad show that deserves to be canceled. But it was like, I think part of getting idol pilled was just accepting that like Tedros is unattractive and a loser, and that's, he's supposed to be that. He's not supposed to be this like hot, sexy dude.
Okay, but I would have written it differently.
Yeah,
if you're gonna have it play out the way it is, like it needs to have something that is at least enamoring about that character to make it make sense. Like for instance, like a Keith Raniere, as creepy as he is, there's still something kind of like,
there was
like,
some undeniable sex appeal exactly. happening.
Like there's you. Something about him that you just kind of go, well,
there's something about
he her. Has a point.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking with Carrie about it, and he was saying that Shia LaBeouf would have been a great Tedros, and I kind of agree.
I could see that. I'd watch that version.
But that's assuming that this person / character is supposed to be like hot and charismatic, which if you're subscribing to like the vulture getting idol pilled theory, he's supposed to be a loser. And that's kind of the whole point. I just don't know how they're going to be able to wrap it up. And I fear, because where I've decided to draw a line in the sand is that like the show's actually genius and everyone will be eating their words by the end of it. And as it gets further and further along, and now with this cancellation, I fear that I won't be
the
proven right.
Ticking
I
on
fear that.
That
things won't get wrapped up or even left like artfully ambiguous yeah. enough to like have me get my win.
Also, too, just like storyline wise. So this grown woman was getting abused by her mother and is a huge, tight group of people around her 24/7 that are supposed to be supporting her and helping her. And nobody stepped up and was like, this is fucked up. This needs to end.
Did you read Jeanette McCurdy's book? I'm glad
no,
my mom died.
Not yet.
I think that that happens fairly often. Maybe not as like flagrantly as they're describing in The Idol, but like the idea of this like abusive show mom, that tracks for me.
Okay.
And like, I mean, yeah, I think it's kind of weird if she's like hitting her with a brush 24/7 and everyone's like, moms will be moms, like not my problem. But it's also like everyone's on the payroll and they need to make the pay horse
and then they're like
work.
Let's do it again.
I'm like, how did Troye Sivan get like Tedros pilled all of a sudden?
Because he offered him cocaine. I just have questions.
Where'd the dog come from?
Oh, that was another one. I think that
whose
that's
dog
probably
is that?
The Weeknd's dog, because they're filming it at the Weeknd's house and mm-hmm. he was just like looked good in the scene. That was my first thought. I was like, a dog that size requires care. And like, clearly no one here is taking care of a dog.
I've never even seen that dog before. But then I kind of was like, I like that. Sometimes celebrities just have dogs randomly.
I had a visceral reaction to this episode, and I guess that's probably...
Yeah, you were
something
you were
people
disturbed
want.
By
I was
it.
Disturbed though. It's like that went into a zone where I don't like the glamorization of trauma like that. It made me icked.
I didn't read it so much as like the glamorization of trauma. I just read it as like kind of pulpy bad writing to be like, oh, we need him to like do something to like, you know, like cult leaders, they'll like have you relive your trauma in order to get like a bigger hold on you. And I was like, okay, I see what they're trying to do here, but like, this is kind of silly to me. We're going to have sexy paddle brush. We're going to really get her with the Eves Durif.
Oh my gosh.
Most thrown by the random dog and the fact that I'm supposed to believe that Jocelyn is burning like a massive boy smells candle on her vanity.
LOL.
I was like,
she probably got it for free.
Hauling ass heads know how I feel about boy smells, and I feel bad because they did send me candles recently, which I appreciated, but also I'm like, no.
I bought 3 boy smells recently because they had a sale for Memorial Day.
Are you liking them?
No.
I mean, I think it's kind of one of the biggest grifts in the candle world at
price,
large.
It's price point.
It's a price point thing, and their design font is like a nice design and font.
Good name.
But like, I recently was made aware that they made a collaborative candle with Magnolia Bakery called Banana Pudding.
Saw that in my email today.
And I said, enough is enough. I have to speak my truth now. I've been silent for too long, and I don't think Jocelyn would be burning a boy smells candle in that mansion.
Magnum sized.
Side note, also, this mansion is really confusing to me because it's like part kind of like Greek columns and then also part Spanish. Whoa. It really throws me. The exterior of the house is like throwing me into a tizzy.
That's Los Angeles fucking huge properties with no taste level.
The interior is like really stunning.
Yeah.
And I like the landscaping and like the pool, like chill zones. But this house is a mashup of 2 different kinds of vibes on the outside. And I'm thrown by that.
That's LA.
But I like it and I want it to keep going.
We just did a tight 25 on the idol and I'm fine with it. But no, it went sheesh for me. Final thoughts.
Okay. You know what? I have to bring up one other thing that's not idol oriented, that is extreme niche A+. Katie Maloney's new haircut. Have you seen?
Yeah, it's okay. It's supposed to be like a Natalie Imbruglia torn video energy. It's giving me Beverly Hills 90210 when all the girls cut their hair for their freshman year of college. Valerie's first episode, if anybody is with me on that.
I don't know that reference, but
I know
it seems like it was a seminal moment, and that haircut is like, it's so good and it suits her. I really think that she like found her look.
Finally.
It's been quite the journey. Years. No, it made me want to cut my hair like that. And that's been on the vision board, but I can't go there. Like, I don't think it would suit me, but it looks so, so good.
A+ Katie Maloney.
We've been rooting
for
you.
Something about her.
She really did it. She did that.
She did that.
Mazel.
I'm really happy you brought that up. We couldn't pass go.
We couldn't pass go. And it's like Tom Schwartz last seen crying into his salmon tikka masala Schwartz and Sandy's.
I still haven't been there. But I did go to Hotel Ziggy this weekend. Follow up.
Okay, and final
rating.
Actually,
it wasn't even a weekend. It was on a Thursday. There's like a lot of memorabilia, but the memorabilia is like, it's like Rihanna from like her second album. It's not like old like Sunset Strip memorabilia. It's like 15 years ago pop music. I don't know. It was not the vibe.
Yeah.
Not on the level, as Bethany would say.
What about grade-wise? What would you give it?
D.
Okay.
I can't even imagine what a room looks like there. Spooky.
I can imagine it has a AC unit in the window.
The
that
font
rattles.
Choice alone tells you everything.
Mm-mm.
It was scary.
Okay, I'm glad to know that at least my like barometer of Ziggy was correct.
My interest was piqued, and when it was put on the table, I was like, it's on my list. I have to go.
Yeah, it was
the
a bucket list moment for you. And I'm glad that you got that. And a Thursday night also, you're really living it up Hollywood style.
What can I say?
Okay, so should we get into the SATC of it all?
Yeah. A palate cleanser.
Yeah.
from Idol in Hotel Ziggy. There's nothing that soothes the soul more than a little Sex in the City.
True. And it's been a long time since I've watched any Sex in the City episodes. Like, usually it'll be like maybe at most 6 months would go by. But this got me back into being like, okay, I need to have a night where I'm just like Sex in the City DJ and go through my old faves. And so I'm really glad we did this because it taught me a lot about myself, what seasons I respond to the most, and just the amazingness of OG Sex in the City.
So how we set this list up is we just thought, coming from a place of personal favorites. So what I did is I pulled up an episode guide for the whole series and I just picked my favorites and then started like a mini rewatch based off of those faves to take some notes and like pull some key moments and whatnot. And then as I started doing this, I really veered off of my initial list because it just, once you get in that SATC zone, it's really hard to jump around.
You get whisked to unexpected places.
I was carried away.
Yeah. And you find yourself watching like a deep cut that you never really thought about, but it really like scratches the itch in that moment. For that reason, I decided to just consult the Bible, which is Sex in the City, Kiss and Tell. If you don't have this book, are you really a fan? The answer is no.
So funny story about that book is my high school boyfriend got me the hardcover version of that book signed by Sarah Jessica Parker.
A keeper.
Well, the book's a keeper. And then years later, I got to meet Patricia Field and she signed it for me too.
That's huge.
Major. Biggest deal. And
collector's item now.
What's even crazier about that meeting with Patricia Fields is somehow the Detroit Free Press ended up there for that meeting and they took a picture of it and it was like on the cover of like the Detroit Free Press style section. My best friend Angie and Patricia Field.
Wow.
It was very cute.
A coup.
And I had very yellow blonde hair at the time.
It happens to the best of us.
It really does.
So I tried to pick episodes from each season.
Me too.
Or I went in being like, okay, I need representation from each season and was worried that maybe I would lean too hard in some seasons more than others. But I managed to get not equal coverage from each season, but one from each season that turned out to be my genuine favorite.
Okay.
I had 22 total favorite episodes and then for the purposes of the pod had to whittle it down. And I think where I landed was 11.
That's great. I'm hovering around 16.
Okay.
But we'll just see how this goes.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm excited to see where we overlap. I'm excited to see what, like, if we don't overlap, like, what that's about.
I think I'm most nervous about this haul right now than I've ever been for any haul. I don't usually get nervous for them, but I just feel like it's such a big, important topic. And I just want to do it justice. So I'm just sharing my feelings with the class.
I love that. You're like me when I went on Guess the Year podcast and had to like come up with a Grateful Dead playlist for like true deep cut heads to guess. And I was like, what if they find out that I'm like a fraud or they think that I'm just like not the fan that I think I am? But I feel really confident in my SATC picks.
No, I'm confident in these. It's just like it's a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, let's start with season one.
Great.
Okay, you want me to start or do you want to?
Say yours first.
Okay, mine is season one, episode 5, The Power of Female Sex.
Okay.
I'll read a synopsis of it. Where is the line between professional girlfriend and just plain professional? Carrie dates a French architect who leaves her $1,000 after they sleep together. A famous painter asks Charlotte if he can paint her unmentionable. Skipper goes fatal attraction on Miranda. I love this episode because Carrie has like a date and then he leaves her $1,000 and then she calls her girlfriends to like come to the hotel, which I think is the Ritz, I want to say. And they have breakfast and they like debate over the like sex work of it all.
And classic line from that one is basically equating money and sex.
Oh, yeah. It has
iconic conversation.
it has the line from Samantha here where she says, money is power. Sex is power. Therefore, getting money for sex is simply an exchange of power. Amen.
Something to think about.
It also features one of my favorite characters, Amalia, like the Euro trash lady who's like, Carrie is so fabulous. And she buys Carrie a pair of shoes in, I think they're Dolce & Gabbana, yep, like feather mules. And I was like, does this actually happen to people? Like, that's incredible. And I've been waiting for my moment where like
that happens.
That happens to me, but I'm still young, so it could happen. Got any time. Day. Yeah.
That's a great one. Yeah. That's amazing.
And it has the Charlotte getting her like vagina painted, which is very like un-Charlotte, but Charlotte always does these like surprising little things.
Unpopular opinion slash I think true opinion is that Charlotte is actually the most sexually advanced of the four.
True.
Because her archetype is so sort of straight-laced, proper, feminine, that they're able to put her in situations that are more out of character, rather. Obviously, Samantha's an obvious one, but of the others, she's really like doing the damn thing the most.
I think it goes Samantha, Charlotte, Miranda, Carrie, yeah, in terms of like sluttiness.
Yeah, because of SJ's nudity clause. Okay, so my season one pick was season one, episode 10, The Baby Shower.
Oh, that one's such a good one, too.
The girls attend a baby shower for their formerly hard-partying friend, Lainey, which leads them to reflect on where they are in their lives. And the thing I love about this show, every time I revisit it, I feel like different themes speak to me in a different way because of the stage I'm at in my life. And at 38, when people are having children and you sort of experience that stage in life of other people making that decision and questioning sort of where you fall in the line of that, this episode just kind of like hit the nail on the head in terms of like things I've been thinking about.
This was on my alternate list and I was really kind of neck and neck and I dropped it, but this is the other like standout A plus episode from that season.
And I just don't feel like, especially in that time in 1998, this had like it was just a really revolutionary conversation to be having, which so much of the themes that are explored on this show. Sure, there's a lot of other criticism in how they're explored, but if you really boil it down, they're the topics covered. They were the first time that we were seeing that on television.
I loved what was the baby name that was stolen? Do you remember? Shayla. I love the character of Lainey because that actress is so good.
Dana Wheeler Nicholson.
And I loved that she showed her boobs. And anytime there's like a flashback, I love a flashback of the girls. And then like her kind of sad when she comes out in New York and like wants to party and everyone's like, oh, this is so sad. And she's like pregnant.
Struggling with her pregnancy bodysuit. She's just trying to show her tits and she's just gotta show her tits and she doesn't know what's happening.
And like, is it Samantha's like standing there and she's like loving it. Yeah.
Loving it.
Incredible. Oh, hilarious.
Such a good episode. So strong.
So strong.
So that was the only one I picked from season one.
Yeah, season one was
a
one.
Because we had to keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
And then for season two, episode one, I think Take Me Out to the Ball Game, because all of a sudden the show clearly has a bigger budget. The girls have figured out their hair and makeup.
Mm-hmm.
The styling has up-leveled. And it's just like the show, I think, has figured out its groove. And we're just like going for it.
Yeah. That's a great one. Them in the baseball stands, like, and Carrie smoking, and then Samantha going, my life sucks, this hot dog sucks, is seminal.
Yeah, and just that visual of them with Carrie in the fur coat at Yankee Stadium. Oh, it's just so good. I think that the conversation around the breakup equation always stuck in my head forever, where Charlotte says that it takes half the amount of time you were with somebody to get over somebody.
Oh, I fully feel that.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. That stuck with me forever. And I love the Yankee. And then it just was like, oh, Carrie's like famous and she can date these like Yankees.
Major Dolce & Gabbana placement in that episode, which just to bring it to now, if anybody's Hulu Kardashianing along with me, just feels nice to see it in the zeitgeist.
Yeah. Okay, I chose season 2, episode 4. They shoot single people, don't they?
Me too.
They? Yeah, because that has the iconic New York Magazine cover, Single and Fabulous, question mark. And I just loved this whole thing. It gets a cameo from Bradley Cooper, who's like the guy that Carrie goes out with.
How many single smokers could there be?
Yeah, she's going to sleep with him to make herself feel better. And then he's like, is this you? And then she has to like peace. And I just loved like her being out and sleeping through the shoot. It just is a classic SATC. I think the episodes that I like the most usually feature Carrie Bradshaw getting like really embarrassed in them or like humiliated. Like that, those are just like my favorite because it made her so likable and like relatable as a character. Like she is the most fabulous person, but then she's finding herself in these like humiliating situations. And
it gives her that every woman edit.
Yeah. There's something like really endearing about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. First overlap. Okay. Another one from season 2. Also, season 2 is just so good.
Season 2 and season 3 are my favorites.
Agree. So season 2, episode 10, The Caste System.
Ooh, yeah, that's
Carrie a good one. And Mr. Big say the big I love you while Miranda has class problems with her bartender boyfriend. Samantha dates a rich man and Charlotte gets caught in the fast lane. So I love the exploration of the American class system, with the peak being Charlotte has like this tryst with this American actor, which society will tell you that's peak.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of like the trickle down experience from there says so much.
Yeah,
speaks to my soul.
My favorite like Sex and the City episodes, and I think what seasons 2 and 3 did so well, is that they would take one theme and then let all the different women explore that in their own ways, and it was like tied together. And I think I always gravitated more towards like when Carrie is single and dating and getting humiliated. I liked that much more than like when she has like a steady relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Though some of my like honorable mentions are like her sadder episodes or like relationship episodes, but we can get into those later. This one was great. I love like when Charlotte, when she reaches her breaking point with the guy, isn't it? He asks her to go to the bathroom,
stick her finger in her pussy,
and then bring it back and let him smell it.
Yeah. And she's like, no. You don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And I also really appreciate Carrie's hairstyle during this era. It was the straight with the extensions.
Oh, that was so good.
Really good.
Mm-hmm. This brings us to my next pick. Season 2, episode 16, Was It Good For You? Was that on your list?
No.
This is Carrie dates a recovering alcoholic who says she's the best sex he's ever had. Charlotte drags the girls to a tantric sex workshop. Samantha tries a threesome with 2 gay friends. And Miranda tries to change her bed karma.
I remember witnessing this episode for the first time. And I remember the cum from the handjob class, and I remember I learned a lot that day.
I love the guy falling asleep while having sex with Charlotte, leading to then the cum scene, which was like a LOL moment for me back then and now, and
has staying power.
It does, and it's just like, wow, the show really goes there. Like, it's not like it's raunchy and funny and like frank talk about sex from like these 4 fabulous women.
It was such a good package in which to what's so interesting. So I had sent Lara this video, the origin of how HBO decided that it was leaning towards female driven content was that Demi Moore was pitching If These Walls Could Talk, and HBO ended up picking it up and it was the most watched ever thing on HBO. And all of a sudden they were like, oh, something with women in it. And at the time, Darren Star, Melrose Place, hello, he had optioned, I think, Candace Bushnell's articles or the book at that point. And that was really like one of the main female driven projects that was available. And that's why HBO picked it up, was because of Demi Moore's If These Walls Could Talk.
I love. And really, what has even been Sex in the City adjacent since then? All I can think of is Girls.
But not even, I think the only similarity with Girls is that it took place in New York City. It was four women and they were white.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it's like tonally very different, but still comedy. Did you do a Girls rewatch during the pandemic?
I didn't.
Okay. I did a rewatch during the pandemic and was like, wait, this is one of the funniest shows of all time. It really hit.
I always enjoyed it when I watched it. The problem was, is that it happened post Sex in the City. So it had those natural comparisons and people just like couldn't accept it for just it being its own standalone piece. And see, I think it's more like, I think when I think of a post Sex in the City world, I think more like Gossip Girl and these shows that were so fashion driven.
Mm-hmm.
Sex in the City did that.
Yeah. But I'm like,
I also didn't watch Gossip Girl, but I just think of like, it proved like a fashion-y kind of like female driven show could get numbers and viewers.
Yeah. I've like fucked with Gossip Girl a little bit and then fell off, but I feel like, and maybe I'm like not remembering, but I'm truly like there's been no other good female shows since Sex in the City.
Yeah, I can't, not in a way that pushed the boundary and like gave us something fresh and new.
Like, I feel like the parallels between Sex in the City and Real Housewives are like not to be snubbed or overlooked, because I think you wouldn't have Real Housewives without Sex in the City for some reason, but it's also not the same thing. And
it proves that there's like a demographic.
Yeah.
Which weirdly, I guess TV executives didn't realize that women like to watch TV.
I like can't even. But the If These Walls Could Talk revelation shook me, because I remember being like pretty young when If These Walls Could Talk 2 came out, and there was like, that dealt with like a lot of lesbians and there were boobs and like lesbian sex. And I remember being like always secretly trying to watch it.
Who was in the second one? I could not remember.
Sharon Stone, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I don't remember it well. I just remember I was like boobs and lesbians and that really spoke to
me.
Well,
I guess the L Word was also a very revolutionary female driven show.
True.
I know that I'm going to think of nine others as soon as we stop recording, and that's just my own cross to bear.
But that's more of like an hour long drama. I'm trying to think of like 30 minute comedies.
Right.
Okay. Season 2, episode 17.
Yep.
20 something girls versus 30 something women.
This one.
A classic.
Just so good. Dr. Bradley Migo.
Oh my God. Dr. Bradley Migo. Carrie in the board shorts and bikini so top cool. combo.
Coolest. Also, Greg, who plays like the younger guy that Charlotte
gets crabs from.
Mm-hmm. The one other thing that he was in that I recognize him from, Crossroads.
Wow. Deep cut.
Deep cut.
The girls get a Hampton share. Samantha's assistant quits, steals her Rolodex, and throws a party of the summer. Charlotte dates a 20-something guy who gives her crabs. Carrie sees Big with Natasha, a 26-year-old he's met in Paris. 26. Wow.
Natasha was 26.
Carrie was in a cowboy hat and a tube top. She looked incredible.
So cool.
I was always just like, Carrie Bradshaw is the hottest person I've ever seen. Like, I get Natasha and everything, but at the same time, I was like, it's all about Carrie.
Absolutely.
No one is cooler than Carrie Bradshaw. and she throws up on the beach and they hold her hair back.
And Miranda holds her hair and it's a callback to when they're at the keg party and that they are said that's the one thing about girls in your 20s. They'll always hold your hair back when you're puking.
And this was a great episode too because it had lots of really funny moments, but then all of a sudden would get so serious all of a sudden, but it felt like earned and heartfelt. And that's what I also loved about Sex and the City.
I think that this episode is like one of the most perfect, fully formed episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it really explores the difference between being a woman in your 20s or a girl in your 20s, as they would say, and a woman in your 30s and sort of the give and take that exists with that.
Yeah. A plus, chef's kiss of an episode.
Plus, I could watch it every day.
Okay, so we're going to move on to season three, unless you have any season two.
Nope, I'm on to season three.
Okay. You go first, because mine come later in the season.
Season three, episode three, Attack of the 5'10" Women.
That was on my honorable mentions.
It's where we get introduced to Magda.
A key player.
Key player in the SATC universe.
And is this the one where they get invited to the luncheon or no?
This is luncheon.
This is
luncheon. This is the luncheon, the woman in the arts luncheon. But really my favorite line. So they're at the spa and the woman said, I just had the most intense massage. Kevin goes down on you. It's so funny. And Samantha's like, huh?
That was incredible. Like all the spa content was so good. And then what popped into my mind, I think this weekend or this past week, was like when they're at the Woman in the Arts luncheon and Samantha comes up to Carrie and she's like, this is Natasha's friend who went to college with her. Tell her what you told me.
She's like, Natasha gained 15 pounds. She's just like, And one time she took a shower with a boy. Like, it's just like.
I loved that.
And so good.
Also just like classic Samantha Jones, a ride or die friend who will find the bitch that will tell you that your enemy gained 15 pounds freshman year.
I had a recent Samantha revelation, and that was that Samantha and Charlotte, not really friends.
Yeah. They weren't. They really didn't spend much time together.
They didn't spend any time together. Anytime there was some sort of interaction, it felt like they were doing like watermelon, 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 cantaloupe, cantaloupe, cantaloupe acting. Like they were just like mouthing off a friendship, like in the background of another scene taking place. Like it's really actually jarring when you see them interact with words because it's so rare.
What if it wasn't really like SJP and Kim who didn't get along, but Kristen Davis and Kim who didn't get along?
Could be. I think maybe it was probably Kim was probably just didn't mesh.
Yeah.
I did think that I saw Kristen Davis walk by me on Abbot Kinney on Friday afternoon.
Ooh, you probably did.
It was a good sighting.
That's a great sighting. Yeah, they weren't really tight on the show. They're the kind of friends that are like hang when the it's like all in the group,
right?
And they'd be on the group text, but they're not going to do anything like one-on-one together.
Yeah, I just had never thought about it before. I was like, oh, like Carrie's the linchpin of this group and like maybe all of them aren't friends separately. I just never considered it. Something to think about.
Like Charlotte and Miranda, I think, are friends separately.
Yeah.
And like Charlotte and Miranda and Samantha are friends separately. But yeah, Samantha and Charlotte butted heads quite a bit over the course of Sex and the City. Because remember Samantha fucked Charlotte's brother in one episode?
Oh, that's right.
Maybe that was like the origin story of their frenemieship. And then there was the frenemies episode, which made it to my honorable mentions, where they're like, where Charlotte's like, you're a slut, and Samantha's like, you're a prude. And then they go and like find other people to hang out with. So they kind of like were at a war with each other the whole time.
Accurate.
Okay. Season three, episode 13. Okay. I consider the LA episodes to be one episode.
Oh, yeah.
So
I had both
them.
Of those.
Yeah.
But I did have one before that.
Okay,
and
yeah.
That's season three, episode 11, Running with Scissors.
Yeah, that was
it's
in my honorable mentions.
An A+. there's a lot to unpack with that, but Miranda pretending to be a stewardess. Miranda had the best storylines. Sorry to say, they were the most poignant.
She did have great storylines.
For a successful lawyer to realize while in a speed dating situation that in order for her to get a guy to pay attention to her, she needed to say she was a stewardess instead of a partner at a law firm.
Groundbreaking.
Hello. Saying so much.
This is also when she's harassed by the hoagie, right? She was harassed by a hoagie in this episode.
At the end.
Oh, is she always harassed? She's harassed by him like throughout the episode. And then she's like...
Is that the same app?
Yeah. Running with scissors. Miranda's harassed by a hoagie. Samantha meets a guy who's ready to strap her into a sex swing, but insists that she get an HIV test first.
Oh, I might have put the wrong thing down. Whoops. Scratch all of that. What episode is it? Where they're speed dating. Is that... What's episode 12?
Episode 12, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Yeah, that's the stewardess one.
Okay.
Okay, that's the one where Charlotte gets married.
Yes.
Which wait. One did you...
Oh, wait.
Now you've failed the Sex and the City test and you will be sent back.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes. That is the one where she gets married because, LOL, in like the argument that Carrie is so obnoxious because, you know, there is that one. Her crying at your best friend's wedding because you just broke up with your boyfriend. She's that bitch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wait. Did you mean that one or the running with scissors? Or both? Both are fine.
I have notes on both. What happened? I glitched.
You were loving both.
I was loving both. See, this is what happened. I told you I like had selected and then I was like, you know what? We're just watching it all.
Yeah. So running with scissors is... when Carrie's relationship with Big goes from like needy to greedy to seedy or mm-hmm, whatever. Mm-hmm, and then they finally fuck in his apartment that he shares with Natasha. And Natasha catches her.
And falls down the stairs and breaks her face. Yeah.
And I just remember being like on the edge of my seat when watching this episode and just being like, oh my God.
And then we have... Season 3, episode 12, where Miranda's pretending to be the stewardess. And it's that whole scenario. Carrie is living with the guilt of having had the affair and ending it with Big. And so she decides to tell Aiden the morning of Charlotte's wedding. And Charlotte, we've learned, has never had sex with Trey.
And then tries to have sex and he can't get it up. I love like the little white lie where she's like, before she walks down the aisle, oh, I have chills. And she's like, Carrie, like I went over to his house and he can't get it up. Like, what do I do? And she's like, oh, it's fine. It happens like sometimes. It's all good. You go. And like, this was the beginning of the end of Trey.
Yep.
That's a very heartfelt.
Very heartfelt.
Sweet episode.
Very sweet. Definitely setting the new trajectory for Charlotte, where she has like everything that she has been sort of working towards the whole series up until now. And then just the slight little twist that the man that she's now married to can't fuck.
The man of her dreams. Yeah. Yeah. So then after the breakup with Aiden, the girls take off for 2 episodes in LA, which are some of the best episodes of all time. You can't watch one without watching the other.
So we've got season 3, episode 13, Escape from New York.
No matter how far you travel or how much you run from it, can you ever really escape your past? In a spur of the moment jaunt, the girls sans Charlotte head to La La Land. Samantha dates a dildo model. Matthew McConaughey hits on Carrie. Miranda gets in touch with her inner vamp when she rides a mechanical bull back in New York. Charlotte does an experiment to get to the bottom of Trey's sexual performance. The stamps.
Also, we get... Oh, yeah, the stamp thing. I
was like, I don't understand this.
Carrie says, take a piece of paper, put it around his penis, and if the circle of the paper rips in the middle of the night, then you know it's... not an erection problem.
How is this woman a sex columnist?
How do you put a piece of paper around a man's flaccid dick without him waking up?
Unclear.
I can't imagine that being a possibility. But she tried it.
And he did get an erection.
Yeah, thank God. But I think also honorable mention to the Sarah Michelle Gellar cameo.
Mm-hmm.
As the producer trying to option Carrie's articles to turn it into a movie. And I think that this is where we get like a little glimpse of the show within the show, which what I would imagine was Candace Bushnell's experience bringing her articles and book then to television. Also, just shout out Candace Bushnell, as one of my favorite facts is that when Dorinda gives her classic line, "How am I doing? Not well, bitch," she's talking to Candace Bushnell.
Huge.
Which is just important. It's like equally, she's given just as much with that scene as just being like a side player in that scene to, you know, the work she's put out that then stemmed this wonderful television show.
We wouldn't be where we are if it weren't for Candace.
Certainly not. Period. She had like a one woman show in New York.
I know. It would got really well
would
reviewed.
Would have loved to see that.
Yeah. I love the Matthew McConaughey cameo. I loved the blue Mustang convertible that Carrie drove all around.
I loved that it was the coolest car and how awful of a driver she was. It was like the perfect like character synopsis.
Yeah. I love that they stayed at the Standard Hotel, RIP.
RIP.
Carrie getting trolled for smoking all the time. It really, oh, and then Samantha, the dildo model, who then turns out to be like a poet on the side. I was like, that is so real.
So real. Did you ever see the movie LA Story mm-hmm. with SJ? It sort of, I think that that's such a funny, accurate representation of LA
yeah.
still to this day. And I think that both of these episodes really do a fun job parodying the classic LA archetypes, because they still stand true.
They absolutely do. I'm thinking now of like other movies that have done a really good job, like even Annie Hall, when they're in LA at the end of that. I was like, it very much is that. Pretty much any stereotype of LA in a show or a movie is very accurate.
Because the writers are here.
Yeah.
They know what's up. They're living it.
Okay, so that brings us to Season 3, Episode 14, Sex in Another City.
The classic Brazilian wax episode, which something that this show touches on, I think, almost in every episode, and is like a nod to the two niche world, they're touching on a trend.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Like, you can always be reminded of like what was in the zeitgeist based off of how one of the ladies' plot lines were written. And so the Brazilian wax was, I think, like just hitting culture at that time. And to my knowledge, I could be completely wrong, but I think that the scene and the conversation around going to Brazil and being completely bare down there, it was like sort of like a new topic.
Totally. And like, if you're watching this show as like a young person growing up, like during this time, this was like how I learned about things like Brazilian waxes or the rabbit or like anything like that, was like, I learned it on Sex in the City.
Yeah, very much so.
When it comes to bags, men and cities, is it really what's outside that counts? Miranda gets together with Lou, an old New York friend who's turned from pissed to placid. Carrie dates a man she thinks is an agent, Vince Vaughn, but who turns out to be a house sitter to the stars. Charlotte hops a plane to LA and admits to the girls that she and Trey are not having sex. Samantha meets Hugh Hefner and gets her fake Fendi stolen at a Playboy Mansion party.
Going to the Valley for a fake Fendi.
The outfit Carrie wore is so good in
so
that
good.
Scene.
One of my favorites.
We get the Carrie scream when like the pit bulls bark at the fence.
And then this scene with Miranda and the writer.
A
where
chew and spit eating
she thinks
disorder.
That she's found the perfect combination of man, who's someone who has like the New York grit, but like the LA chill. And come to find out, he's just got an eating disorder.
I'm always obsessed too when the show does like the big turn on like a man that you think is like the dream man, but then there's something like brutally wrong with him.
And he's spitting out his steak and he gives this whole thing of like how he needs to look good. And she's like, but you're a writer.
And he gets so mad. He's like, Jesus. And I was like, that's
so
like
real.
Peak comedy to me.
So real. So funny. And also another outfit, important outfit shout out, is Carrie's sparkle caftan at the Playboy Mansion lives rent free in my brain forever and always.
Is that one of your top outfit, Carrie Bradshaw outfit?
Yes.
Love that. I would say her like purse valley excursion outfit was a top for me. All her LA looks were really good.
Were just those two episodes. I want, where's that movie? That should have been.
What?
Instead of Dubai.
I know. Go back to LA. Well, maybe we'll get it this season with Che and Miranda. Probably not.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Okay. So if you're looking for a binge of Sex and the City and you're like going to play Sex and the City DJ, I honestly recommend jumping in at 13 and watch 13, 14, and 15 because those were all on
I had the
list.
Same
Hot Child in the City,
just beyond. It's perfect episode.
It's another perfect episode. Are we 34 going on 13? When Samantha is hired as a publicist for an A-list bat mitzvah, she starts to wonder whether there's any difference between women and girls. Miranda's new braces make her feel like a teenager. Charlotte and Trey see a sex therapist and learn to name their privates. Carrie dates a comic book artist who still lives with his parents. This is the classic episode where Carrie dates this comic book artist who's a huge stoner, and she starts going over to his parents' apartment to smoke weed with him and like eat chicken wings.
Yes, please, Mrs. Adams.
And she gets caught smoking weed with him, and he throws her under the bus and says, the mom comes out and is like, is this your weed? And he's like, it's Carrie's weed. And she goes, is that true? Is this yours? And she goes, yes, it is. And I'm taking it with me when I leave. And then Perfect. She goes gets high with her girls.
The best episode. Also, just that cafeteria scene where they're like eating at the hot new restaurant that's cafeteria style, and they pass that note to the guy to get the number, and the Chanel top that SJ is wearing.
That whole Chanel outfit, head to toe, the looks were so good.
So on point. Like this region of just the show in its stride. Like yeah. Just hitting every note so perfectly, speaking to the culture, speaking to third wave feminism. I mean, it's just like all of the things are, all my boxes are checked.
Yeah. And then also we get Carrie going, I'm scooting in heels.
So good.
And then honorable mention, episode 16 is Frenemies, the one where Charlotte and Samantha get in a fight and Samantha was going to invite them to Sushi Samba. And she goes, no more samba for you. And then goes and finds that like southern slutty lady who gives a blowjob the table.
And then isn't this also the learning? Was that the Learning Annex episode?
Yeah, which is another
Bright
classic.
Light State City.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Then even another honorable mention, you could even go to 17. What goes around comes around, where Carrie gets robbed. And then she has to re-meet with Natasha and apologize to her, and Natasha gives that really good monologue, and she's like, and no matter how much work I get done, this tooth is still a different color than this tooth.
So good. Okay, now I'm into season four.
Yeah, we're into season four now.
Okay, I went, obviously this one is so, I feel like this one's seminal. Season four, episode two, yeah. The Real Me, cameo by the great Margaret Cho. We have Carrie agreeing to do a charity fashion show for New York Fashion Week that real people, quote unquote, and models are all walking and paired with different designers. Again, a Dolce & Gabbana moment.
Mm-hmm. Carrie gets a dress fitted for like this gorgeous dress, but then last minute it gets given to Heidi Klum and they put Carrie in sparkly panties and like a big coat, like
blue satin coat,
and she looks incredible obviously, but falls on the runway and becomes fashion roadkill.
And we have Kevin Aucoin makes a cameo. We have Alan Cumming playing Dolce or Gabbana or one of them. It's just a real romp. Classic, incredible. Charlotte's vagina's depressed.
Samantha gets revealing photos taken.
That's when I learned about a macrobiotic or all organic. That's so funny. They're like, how do you eat all organic? Like, it's so funny. She's like, I'll just have water and lemon. Thank you.
Was this the one where, so Miranda meets a guy at the gym who thinks she's really sexy, and then she starts like leaning into her confidence. And then when she starts feeling confident, he's like, you're vain and I don't like it.
Yeah. He's like, you just seemed like too full of yourself.
I love that. Another keen observation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one was A+ episode. A+.
And then my next one from season 4 jumped to just episode 8.
Wow. That was my only pick when I whittled down from season 4.
Okay. But so I had to touch on my motherboard myself.
This is a really good one.
Work, work, en bon pain, work. One of my favorite lines that I still say to this day, all of the time.
Why were so many independent women... ... Then Carrie's computer crashes and Aiden is overly supportive. Miranda's mother has a heart attack and dies suddenly. Charlotte micromanages the girl's trip to the funeral. Troubled by Miranda's mother's death, Samantha has difficulty with her orgasms.
Great episode. And just to bring it back to Girls, the woman that plays Lena Dunham's mom in Girls plays Miranda's sister.
Oh, yeah.
Just something to think about.
Wow. HBO fam. I really related to like Carrie's dilemma in this episode, where it's like you're having an issue and your partner is like too supportive. Like you need them to be like, fuck, like screaming or be like mad or like, and it's just like really annoying the whole time. And she's very annoyed with
it. Right. Aiden. Or let you figure it out for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that too was part of it, because he was basically showing up and being so supportive, actually ended up buying her a backup system and a new computer. And she's doing that thing that I relate to so well, where you're so used to your independence that like having somebody kind of like swoop in and help feels foreign and hard. And then at the end, when they're walking down the church runway. It's not a runway. What is it?
Aisle.
The church aisle. And without being asked, both Aiden and Steve are there at the funeral. So it sort of speaks to like the different levels of support people need in times of challenge.
Mm-hmm. Don't get me a laptop that's a Windows PC.
With the handle.
I want, oh, he gets
it. It was that Apple of the time that had like the different bright colors, like the one he got her was like the blue plasticky one.
She didn't like that.
Nope, not the vibe. Can I just ask a really quick question about the and just like that and Steve's place? How come he aged the way he did? Or why did they age him like he's like playing or like play it like you're 80?
Yeah, I'm really thrown by Steve. I thought that they were gonna like, because he's kind of deaf. Oh, I think that he actually has hearing problems in real life. So they were like, we're going to incorporate that into the show.
But to have hearing issues in this era of time is like not like.
That's run of the mill. He does seem particularly aged. And I was worried that they were going to give him a dementia storyline because his mom had dementia. So I thought like we're going like Alzheimer's. And I was really not ready for that. No. Thank God it didn't go down
that. But he's not in the poster for the new season.
I still can't get over the fact that Miranda divorced him. Like that doesn't feel right to me.
I don't think she ever loved him.
I don't subscribe to them getting divorced.
She settled.
But she loved him when he was with that, wasn't it Julie or someone? When she was dating Dr. Robert, the doctor of the Knicks. And then she was in love with Steve. And I believed that. You think she was just like type A and jealous that he was moving on and happy? Is Miranda the most toxic person on the show? Yes. I think
it might be Carrie.
We thought it was Carrie this whole time, but actually I think it is Miranda.
I love Miranda. I think she has the best storyline.
But what about now?
Well, are we counting now? It's really hard to rewatch through the lens of knowing what we now know. Like Big dying on the Peloton.
No, but I think that now what we now know, it is now canon. And I think that as it turns out, Miranda aged into like a very toxic lady.
You're not wrong.
She's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
No shade. I mean, glad she stopped drinking. But she left her husband for Che Diaz, who is like a fuck boy. She's throwing her entire life away for Che. And instead of like taking like a long look in the mirror and maybe going to like a 12-step program or like addressing what issues lie underneath, she's just like running away to Hollywood with Che Diaz. This is a woman in crisis.
Well, when you put it like that, you're not wrong. I'm just happy her hair is red again.
Yeah, me too.
That was a good choice.
That was a great choice. I want to take a moment and read an excerpt from this book that made me laugh.
Okay.
But also made me be like, damn. Okay, so in the book Kiss and Tell, they have little synopses of each like episode, but then they also will have like a behind the scenes blurb about just that has to do with that episode or that era from like either one of the writers or the actors. So in the episode Ghost Town, which is season 4, episode 5, where Carrie like runs into Aiden again and she thinks that like she wants to like start a relationship with him again and he's like looking really hot this time. This is what Michael Patrick King had to say about the Aiden of it all. When we decided to bring Aiden back in the 4th season, I went to John Corbett and said, "Johnny, we want to bring you back differently to show you that we're not just a television show bringing a character back. We want to bring you back as a guy who has a changed attitude, and the only criticism we've ever heard about is your hair and your weight." Even though I had loved his weight, John said, "I knew I was a fatty," and I said, "Johnny, the season where you had a little bit of extra weight on showed people that you could act, and now we can bring you back rock hard and give Carrie lines about the new and improved Aiden." He said, "I get it." Hollywood is a cursed town.
Damn.
Makes me feel better as a woman to know that someone went to John Corbett, arguably one of like the hottest guys ever, and was like, "You're a big fat fatty, lose weight, and then we can bring you back." And him having to be like, "I know."
Jesus. Okay. Wow.
No one wins.
No one's immune.
Okay. So I'm going to move to season 5, unless you have any more season 4s.
Season 4, episode 17 of Vogue Idea.
Okay. How much does a father figure figure? After meeting a paternal editor at Vogue, Carrie tries to figure out whether her problems with men have to do with her own father. Samantha fulfills Richard's birthday wish to bring a little more love into their relationship. Charlotte hosts Miranda's baby shower. Miranda wonders whether she has the mother gene.
We've got Candace Bergen cameo as a Vogue editor saying, giving one of a classic Sex and the City pun. She says, speaking of the article that Carrie wrote about accessories and men, she says, "We need less Carrie Bradshaw and more carry this bag with these shoes."
I always really loved how bitchy she was to Carrie.
So good.
It and was then amazing.
The suit that Carrie wears in that initial Vogue scene, she's wearing like a full Vivian Westwood ensemble pinstripe suit.
It was a really good look.
We're seeing her short hair for the first time.
This episode, like, I'll come back to it, but then there's something about it that felt like the show was veering in a different direction. I think this kind of signified that. And like, I think I was also really weirded out by like the sexual harassment.
Cookie.
Yeah, I didn't like that, and that was like too dark for me.
Yeah, there it's like workplace sexual harassment, but make it punny and stylish.
And then she continues to work there and it's just like a non-issue. But something I was just like, wait, this is like,
Fully drops trowel, shows her his Versace boxers, wants her opinion on them, and she just lets it roll off.
Does she get the Manolos at the end of the... She did the get Manolo, the Manolo
Mary Janes?
Yeah.
I don't know if she swiped them.
The way I bought a Nine West dupe of those Mary Janes...
I think I did a Jessica Simpson version myself.
But yeah, this was like, I was like, ooh, like it really freaked me out.
Yeah, but you're right. Something shifts. There's something that happens where they're like, okay, we're bringing this into fantasy land, Carrie up leveling her career. It's not so much an exploration of like what it means to be female in this time anymore. And it's more like, let's put this character in sort of like fabulous situations.
Yeah. She kind of starts, I think she starts to stop getting humiliated as much, which I like it when she does that. There was one moment like in season 5, episode 1, where her skirt like flies up over her head on like a blustery New York day, and that made me laugh out loud and was always like, oh, there she is.
There's our girl.
This definitely was like taking a left turn.
Yes, I completely agree. And then yeah, now we're on to season 5.
Okay, my first one is season 5, episode 3, Luck Be an Old Lady.
Had that one too.
The girls go to Atlantic City.
Which they're, sorry, wait for it, 36.
For Charlotte's 36th birthday that she's having an existential crisis about, and they call it her 30-faux birthday, and she makes them promise not to tell anyone that she's 36. As a 39-year-old, I'm shaking in my boots.
I don't want to care. I don't want to be the person who like voices and being like, that makes me feel funny and confused. But it does. Like, I'm just like, because when I watched that show, 36, I mean, I don't think it even registered the actual number to me, but I was like, oh wow, they're like struggling with becoming middle age and grappling with that. And I'm like, I don't feel anywhere near that.
No, I mean, on sheer just like numbers of it all, like I don't have like qualms about saying what my age is to people, but on like a society's standards of women aging. And even like when I was watching this episode, I think I was like 20 and I was like, yeah, they're old fucking hags. They like, they're getting old now, like thinking that that was so, so old. And I don't feel older than like 30 personally.
Likewise.
But now, we were saying this like before we started recording, like, I remember turning 35 and being like, oh my God, I'm like so excited to enter my Sex in the City Carrie Bradshaw years. Like, this is gonna fucking slay. And then COVID happened. And then all those years were just like taken away because of the pandemic. And then now I'm on the other side of that. And I recently realized, I was like, I'm gonna be older than Carrie Bradshaw was on Sex in the City soon.
I mean, I was trying to think of how old is Samantha, because they never actually say, but I think we're definitely at first season Samantha, which is blowing my mind.
But like Samantha, I think must have been like 40. I think Samantha's like 10 years older than them, because remember, she's like thinking she has menopause in one season, and then she fucks that like old,
yeah,
cheesy dude. Yep. And then she gets her period in his bed and she's like, sure, thank God, and gets out of there. So, and they allude to like her, like, remember when she gathers in the bathroom, she's like, ladies,
I'm a bit older than
you. I have something to, yeah. And like, so that makes me think she's like late 40s.
Okay. It's kind of random.
Yeah. Like, what's this lady doing hanging out with these broads?
If you think about it, it's a little random. No, there's something that happens to your brain when you realize that you're older than Carrie and Miranda on Sex and the City. I don't know what it is, but it's an internal digestion.
Well, it's also just jarring. and I hate that it's jarring, but it just is, to watch and just like that, and then see these women who are like almost 60 now, because it's just not how you like remember them in like the quote unquote glory days of Sex and the City. And it is like, it is such a different show, but that also makes me sad that it doesn't like sit right with me.
Yeah. And I think too, that was like a big, like the ageism that bubbled up when the episode one of And Just Like That premiered was really something to look at.
Yeah.
Because people get older.
I guess it's like,
and I guess we're just not used to seeing women that age on screen that aren't Real Housewives.
Yeah, it's like Real Housewives or like Book Club. And those women are like in their 80s.
Truly, like it's slim pickings.
Yeah. And I think what's also a little bit difficult, and maybe this is just like how it is when you are late 50s, like early 60s, but like I think selfishly, like I want to see a show where it's like women can be older, but they're still living like the same like fabulous like youthful lives as they were in their 30s. And I guess that's just not true. Like you will probably have to get a hip replacement surgery. I don't know, but I don't like it one bit.
The thing about being in our 30s is, you know, if all things go correctly, you have a lot of life left to live.
Mm-hmm.
And there's possibility. And the thing that Sex and the City played into so well is the possibility of how you're going to set your life up and the sort of like the ups and downs that go that we experience as we're going through that, and like how you pick a partner and like all the like weird, crazy experiences you have in that process. And then to now visit these women when they're on the other side of that and their life has happened. And Miranda admits that she sort of regrets having a kid, and that she like dreamt of what it would be like to have kind of leaned more into her career and becoming a judge, or the fact that Carrie's a widow, or the fact that now Charlotte is dealing with teenagers and that experience of being a mother. Like it's like a dose of reality that I think is very different than what the show originally started out as, which was truly just taking articles about different types of people and their sexual and relationship explorations and sort of like the archetypes that there were, and then turning it into a scripted show. So the show has had this sort of like continuous revamp because people just love it and they love these characters. So they're like, okay, we're just gonna keep kind of like maturing with our audience and like rolling with it and like acknowledging the fact that, you know, the first round of this show was like very much through like a white female lens. Now let's switch that up and let's bring in more diverse casting. And it's just kind of wild how it's just continues to morph.
It is, but I don't think it's morphed for the better, unfortunately.
No, my stance on it is that it's just like, at least it's something. Like, I'd rather have something than nothing.
Same. But I guess also what I'm trying to say is I miss Samantha. And
oh,
she would have been that touchstone person, because I do think that there are women that like age and live like fabulous lives and like don't, their decisions, like, and she is, and is that, I guess, is that like a fantasy? I don't know. But I think that there are women that like live, like age and live without kids and have fabulous lives.
And I would love to see that explored through the Samantha character. Like, that would be so cool. But
I guess Seema is like our proxy to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're trying, I guess they want to do it through like Seema or like LTW. And I'm open to that, but, and they make sense to me, like in the world of the show,
yeah,
as like people, and even like Nia Wallace, like Miranda's
professor,
those all make sense to me in the world of the show. And then there's just Che Diaz, who is someone we all have something. To come to terms with.
They're like, let's try this.
They really are trying something. But yeah, I just miss Samantha so much.
Me too. It's palpable. You can feel her absence. But at the same time, I'm just like, well, at least it's something. Like, we're getting something, and I like that.
True.
Better than nothing.
Season 5, episode 6, Critical Condition. This is Nina Katz and the face.
So good.
When it comes to life and love, why do we believe our worst reviews? Carrie meets the woman who dated Aiden after her and fears her bad reviews. Baby Brady won't stop crying until a sympathetic neighbor gives Miranda a vibrating chair. Samantha babysits Brady and gives him her new vibrator to keep him quiet. Charlotte meets Harry Goldenblatt, her divorce lawyer, and wins her apartment in the settlement. This got into a new era where I was like, okay, we're back on like kind of vintage Sex and the City, where you take one thing and kind of like explode it
through these four different perspectives. Yeah. Classic one. So good. The others that I had season 5, episode 7, The Big Journey.
Ooh, the San Francisco trip.
I love when they go places. When they travel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that they took the train thinking that it would be really romantic and then, or just like sexy. And then Samantha shows up in that, all those men watching sports, and she's like, ooh, can I get a beer? And they're like all married and not interested in her.
It was like a full bust. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I appreciate all of that. That was my pick for, that was my second pick for season 5.
Okay. And the good news is you can watch those in succession because it's season 6 or episode 6 and episode 7.
Yep. And then season 6, the final season, that we got in two parts, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. Though I do wish that part 2 had more than 6 episodes.
I know.
Did The Sopranos do a two-part final season?
I don't know. You know what? I've never watched The Sopranos.
Whoa.
I'm just saving stuff, you know?
Yeah, you'll get there.
Definitely.
Season 6, episode 7, The Post-it Always Sticks Twice.
Classic. I mean, standout, perfect episode.
Carrie's hair in this also was like getting back to being kind of like that curly, like she never really fully went blonde again, but it was like, it harkened back to like old school Carrie Bradshaw.
Season 5 was tough with the short hair for Carrie. So I think that season 6, they got back into the classic curls.
Well, because season 5, I think SJP was also pregnant.
Yeah.
So like in the bad reviews episode, she's like clearly pregnant walking through like the farmer's market with Stanford.
Mm-hmm. And I remember the Juicy Couture. That I had one of those and I gave it away. How dumb am I?
So dumb.
I hate that.
I had one. I would actually kill for that.
I literally think about it on a daily basis. It was the terry cloth tube dress that had like this like ruching elastic at the top.
I had a black one, velour black.
Mine was white terry.
I would wear it with jeans.
Sad. Not sad that you wore it with jeans.
No, sad that, but also.
Sad that I don't have mine anymore.
They have to be on eBay.
Need to find.
Posh. That might be.
I still have my original Juicy velours. I wear the pants all the time. I have 2 pairs of the velour pants.
I have my best friend gave me her navy blue pair and I wear the top and the pants quite a bit. It's great lounge.
You have to have them before they Juicy sold to Liz Taylor. Mm-hmm. Or not Liz Taylor.
Liz Claiborne.
Thank you. Liz Taylor.
I wish they'd sold to Liz Taylor. They might still be good.
Great. Because then the quality went down.
Yeah.
But the original quality Juicy Couture, velour, and terry, there's nothing like it. Stands the test of time.
Someone needs to just remake those.
They've tried. Skims tried. The velour was bad quality. I think Paris tried.
They are not going to serve you the quality at the price point that you need. Because those were expensive.
They were so expensive.
How much were those dresses? Like 200?
They were so expensive.
I remember being like, this is a huge ticket item. But I loved that. That was my dresses over jeans era.
The chokehold that a velour suit had on me.
The chokehold that like a tube that I would wear like a skirt as a dress and then wear jeans. Very Hillary Duff.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was really cool.
I started watching Sex and the City. I think I was like probably 16 or 17, maybe 15. And it was on, and my stepmom at the time watched it. And so we would watch it together because she was like pretty young and it was like watching it with like your sister or something. And then I was sent to boarding school. On a visit, I tried to like watch an episode with my mom, and it was the one where Samantha goes down on a guy and he has funky spunk. And my mom was...
I just went down on a guy who had the funkiest tasting spunk.
Charlotte just gets up and leaves. That was so good. But my mom was horrified and offended. Made me turn it off. She was like, this show like is... I've never seen anything such trash. Like, you will not watch that around me. And then I was like, okay, obviously I'm obsessed with this show now. Got home from boarding school. Had no friends. Didn't know anyone. I'd been off the radar for 2 years. Went out, bought the box set of Sex and the City seasons 1 through 6A. Watched all of them within like probably the first month that I was home. And I was like, these are my friends now. This is my life now. This is the life I want. I am Carrie Bradshaw and this is what's happening.
That's amazing.
And then caught up that and then season 6B was like out after I had caught up. And then I did have one older gay man friend, Martin, who was like 40 and I was like 20. Yeah, I was 20. And I would go over to his apartment and we watched the final episodes together.
Aww,
and it was really
that's
sweet.
So special. I think the first episode I ever saw was the lightning bolt shaved into... Is that... What episode was that? Am I glitching?
Are you thinking of Nip Tuck?
No.
They did another... Oh, maybe... Did Samantha shave a lightning bolt?
Did Samantha do a shaved lightning bolt? Or am I fully having... It would have been first season. Second season.
I can't remember. That sounds right, though.
So that one and then the Helena Rubinstein episode were the first two that I remember seeing and being like, knowing that this show is like naughty. And I immediately craved it as soon as I saw it for the first time.
Oh, yeah. It must have been first season. The cheating curve. Oh, and Samantha's like personal trainer, I think, shaves a lightning bolt into her bush. Yeah. Good memory. The first episode I ever saw was when Charlotte has the fantasy about the gardener with like the roses.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. And that just like really visually stuck out in my mind. And then I was like, oh, my God, this is like an exciting, fun,
exciting, new,
show.
Special, female driven.
Do you have any other season 6 picks?
Yes. Closed it out with season 6, episode 20, An American in Paris, part 2.
Okay. I have one before that.
Oh, okay.
Season 6, episode 18, Splat, with Lexi Featherstein or Featherstone falling
iconic.
Out the window. That's one of the best monologues and like jump scares, unexpected twists, dark, but still really funny. And I was like loving it.
I feel like that was actually like, to me, the last actual episode that we got. And yeah. Then the other two were sort of just like, okay, like, let's see where we can take it.
The other two were like going into full fairy tale land.
Exactly.
But I wasn't mad at it. I was just like, this is truly like cinema now.
Right. I'm not discerning when it comes to Sex and the City. I'll take it all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, as I said earlier, like, I'm just happy.
You're happy to be here.
That it's here.
You're happy to exist in this time.
Exactly. So like, I'll just take it, good, bad, otherwise, I'm fine with it.
And also the American in Paris part 1 and 2 are like, they are the kind that also are watched in a pair. Exactly. Much like the LA episodes. Yeah. So they're kind of like one episode.
And then the show ends. And we think, okay, great.
But then the movie is cultural juggernauts.
Wait, what's the theme song when they're like looking for the Fergie song?
Oh my God. When Fergie redid the theme song. How dare she? But also, I Am Woman.
Oh my God.
Karaoke in Dubai.
It's too much.
With the belly dancers.
Labels or Love is the name of the song. And it's like, shopping for labels, I'm shopping for love. Manolo and Louis, it's all I'm thinking of. And it's like, dun, 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 dun. It is a rough scene.
Did Sex and the City make us collectively like obsessed with fashion more so? Like, would we be as a culture, would influencers exist were it not for Sex and the City fashion?
That's a deep question.
Would bloggers exist were it not for Sex and the City fashion?
Probably not in the same way. I mean, the way that this show like ignited a passion for not just fashion, but for styling. That's what the best part in looking back on the ensembles these women are wearing. There's like always something that someone has on that is in this moment now cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Patricia Field was just like top of her game, because she was truly putting a look together. She was curating a vibe with these outfits that were just like so special. There's actually this incredible Instagram account called
Finding Carrie's Closet.
Finding Carrie's Closet, where she has the curator of this Instagram account finds pieces from the characters, and then she has a newsletter that you can sign up for. I think it's like a Patreon or something where Ooh. She gives you links to buy.
That's
so major. It's a genius business model. I just want to hats off to this creator who came up with this. It's so genius. And it's a great Instagram account just to see the pieces kind of like stand alone and then see how they were put together on the characters.
Yeah, Carrie's styling was and remains so good.
So good. But then too, like the styling helped drive the characters too. Like the way Samantha dressed was so perfectly aligned with her character. Miranda, Charlotte, even Stanford, like everybody, the styling was such an important aspect to the show, which just made the viewing experience that much more fun.
Mm-hmm. Hats off to the whole team.
Hats off to everybody involved. Just really well done.
I love that Samantha, aka Kim Cattrall, is coming back for one phone call and demanding to be styled by Pat Field. So finally we'll get like a Pat Field
and
moment.
Got paid $1 million.
Yeah. May we all get to that point in our lives where we get to do the least for the most.
That's it. That's the goal. That's the takeaway. Wow. What a haul.
What a haul.
Really a different type of haul this time.
Just an A+ haul across the board.
Just pulling A+s. A+, doing it A+, like it's just all A+.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Lana haul where every single was an A+.
Exactly.
Anything else you want to add?
I do want to say that for you podcast lovers out there, one of the best podcasts I've ever listened to is the And Just Like That Writer's Room podcast, which is all the writers from the show talking about how they put together each episode, why they made all of the choices that they did. A lot of the writers wrote on the original show, so it just is great.
BTS.
Rich conversation about why they chose the plot lines that they did for each character, each episode of And Just Like That. And it made the viewing of And Just Like That way better for me.
Okay, I need to check that out because you've said that to me a lot. And so I need some explanation.
You're like, I need answers.
I need a lot of answers.
I'm actually excited that we're getting And Just Like That season two purely because I'm excited that this podcast is coming back. I'm assuming it's coming back.
And I think that season two will be better than season one. It seems like even from like the previews, I'm like, oh, okay, this seems like more of like the girls at dinner and like lunching. And I don't want to be reminded of like real life stuff.
Right. I think also they're maybe able to establish Carrie out of being like a widower, like a fresh out of mourning and true. Able to kind of like get back on the scene.
And COVID is essentially a thing of the past. So they won't be like utilizing as many green screens or like AI technology for backgrounds. Hoping.
All right.
Also, if you've never listened to it, I don't know what's wrong with you. You're not a fan, but you should listen to the Origins podcast, Sex in the City. They did this podcast, Origins, does like an oral history of Sex in the City and interviews every single person involved, except I think Kim Cattrall said no. But it is so good.
Okay.
And I would say come for the story, stay for Pat Field's cigarette rasp. Nice. Yeah. Amazing. It is next level.
I love that. I think I wanted to ask you, are you bringing Saving Sex in the City 3 back?
I am. I'm working on it. Okay. Right now. It's a labor of love and a true artist passion.
It's a passion project.
Yeah, but I'm like culling episodes right now.
Great.
And slowly building up my library to then have episodes in the can to release.
And Sup will be recapping.
Sup will
AGLT.
Be recapping And Just Like That season two. So that's very exciting.
It's a lot to look forward to here.
Yeah.
Lots in the What's Your Journey universe.
We're pivoting from Vanderpump Rules. We're leaving Scandoval in the past and we're starting fresh with new eyes on new horizons.
I will certainly be tuning in. Okay, guys, really quick update before we go in regards to the survey that so many of you have filled out. It's such a joy to read all of your responses. Thank you so much. We're going to actually keep it going till the end of the month. And then starting in July, we'll be announcing the winners of some of the incredible prizes that we have to offer.
Every week in July, there will be a new winner announced on the pod. So you basically have one more week to get entered to win a variety of incredible A-plus prizes. I'm talking a suite of products from our sponsor, Juna, an Eau de Cité facial roller, a sleep crown pillow designed by the one and only Elizabeth Cott.
That's me.
A Goop vibrator, the best vibrator in the entire world, and a color cord lighting fixture that plugs in. So literally every single week, a new winner is announced. These are all prizes that I either have or crave and / will be buying in the future. And the way to get in on the action is just taking our survey.
And you can find the link for that in the show notes. And yeah.
Okay. Well, until next time.
Stay niche.
Bye.
Bye. Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shainhalls and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you love today's episode, please give us a 5-star A-plus rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at this_is_too_niche.
One of my favorite big ticket investment items is from Higher Dose. From infrared sauna blankets to PEMF mats, their science-backed tech helps you sweat and recharge and glow like never before. I am such a fan. I truly lie on my PEMF mat every night. I also love my sauna blanket. They are just incredible items. And because you're a Too Niche listener, you get 15% off your order with code NICHE15 at checkout. So head over to higherdose.com, use code NICHE15, and elevate your wellness routine today.